In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review American Hustle and The Wolf of Wall Street. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. I managed to get it out this time.
I know.
I've been having trouble.
I like that you got Yazdi's laugh in the last one. It's kind of cute.
You had a bit of a jinx on it.
Yeah.
I know. I think I edited out my completely kerfuffled one, which is why you laughed at the end of the...
I was laughing. I like it.
Anyway,
Happy New Year.
This is our first recording session of 2014.
Indeed.
And hopefully it's going to be a good year for movies.
Yes.
Although,
yes.
No Pixar, I heard, this year.
Was there one last year?
Isn't that a good thing these days?
Yeah, right? Well, they had Cars. No, it wasn't Cars 2.
Aeroplanes?
No, it was Cars 2 last year.
It was Cars 2. Yeah. No, there was one more after that. Oh, Monsters University.
Thank you.
Oh, Monsters that was U. Nice. I like that.
I like Monsters U. But yeah, they've put Finding Dory out, because that's the sequel to Finding Nemo, out to like 2015. And there was another movie that they were working on. I forget what it was, but they pushed that one out too. They switched directors, which is not something new to Pixar. They tend to do that, but...
And we haven't done our yearly show roundup, have we? And we're probably going to do that at some stage soon.
Yes.
I guess in time for the noms. Oscar noms. But
the movie while the muggies.
Yes. So I guess we'll do our kind of pricey of the year, but I hope 2014 is going to be a better year for movies.
It couldn't possibly be. I thought 2013 was outstanding.
Really?
I mean, I'm about to finish up my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a top 10, it's my top 17, and
really?
I cannot cut down one out of those. I don't know how to cut down seven of those movies.
I had a very different experience last year, because it's funny, as we think about award seasons, one of the reasons I don't want to do our awards until the Oscar noms are out is I'm hoping that there are some hidden gems that we've somehow missed, because honestly, as I look through the movies that we've reviewed, there's nothing that really excites me, nothing that really got me going in the way that something like Life of Pi did last year, or even Argo, which I wasn't the biggest fan of, but there were some really...
I think there have been some amazing performances, and I think there have been some amazing, you know, directors, but I kind of agree with Joe Yazdi that as far as whole films are concerned, less for me this year than last year.
Oh, wow.
Is Man of Steel one of your 17?
Of course it is. try 117. we should do a tally of how many movies we watched.
Oh, gosh.
During the year, we must have watched quite a few.
It was a good year for us in terms of quantities. So, more and better for 2014, let's hope.
And I guess we're still finishing off the 2013 cycle with all of the reviews coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah. And I love when the Oscar noms come out, because there's always one or two things that somehow the mainstream has missed, that the Academy somehow gets access to.
And a resurgence of some of the older ones that came earlier in the year, even.
I'm hopeful that we'll get one or two things to add to the list. I know the foreign language noms... certainly there's one or two there that we haven't seen.
Yes, those are the Golden Globe noms.
They came out with theirs. All right, well, let's talk about our two movies of the week this week. Shall we start with American Hustle?
And we shall. So American Hustle is the latest from David O. Russell. He, from The Three Kings, I Heart Huckabees, The Fighter, and last year's Silver Linings Playbook. Russell is back here doing a movie which is based on real-life events surrounding the AppScam scandal from the 70s. It is about a pair of con men, Irving Rosenfeld and Sidney Prosser, who teamed up with a rather unstable FBI agent, Richie DiMaggio, in the 70s in order to bring down the New Jersey Mafia. And the movie essentially recreates those events and takes a few liberties with it. The movie stars Christian Bale and Amy Adams as the two con men, or con man and con woman. Bradley Cooper as the FBI agent, Jeremy Renner as the New Jersey mayor, Robert De Niro in a small part playing a mafia man from the south of not from the south of America, but yeah, from one of the southern states, from Florida. And also Jennifer Lawrence. The story is based on Eric Singer's book, and David O. Russell also shares writing credits for it. American Hustle was, right from the start of the year, was considered as one of the top contenders, and it was released with a lot of fanfare just a few weeks before the end of the year. And now it's playing, and so I'm eager to hear what you guys thought of it.
Okay, so for me, this is a delightful gangster meets 70s, 80s pop culture caper movie that's really watchable right from the start. I think it captured a period in time really well, rather like Argo did last year, but I think it was a bit more tongue-in-cheek, and I think as a result, it makes it a little bit hard to take seriously at times. But that said, I loved this movie while I was watching it, and I think there are some standout performances from Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, and of course the phenomenal Jennifer Lawrence.
Joe?
So my favourite thing about the movie was the performances. I think he got some really good work from his entire acting ensemble here. Like you said, Rashmi, everyone was great. I did feel it was somewhat derivative of Argo. You mentioned Argo because I think its visual style was so aped from Argo, that whole 70s look and feel. And yes, it was set in the same period, but it was more than that. I felt that they, you know, did some of the credits in the same way Argo did. So, but other than that, I mean, this was a fun movie. I just don't feel the same love that I think the rest of the world seems to feel for it. I liked it a lot. It's an enjoyable, I'd recommend it to anybody. But boy, oh boy, everyone's talking about this movie as if it's some, you know, something that will stand the test of time. And I don't think it does for me.
So I'm more Joe than Rashmi this week. So, I mean, like the both of you said, it's a very well-made movie with a great story, which is inspired by actual events. But the film did not do anything for me. I mean, I felt, when you're one of those Disneyland rides where you're sitting on something and moving along and characters pop up, they sing and they drop down, another character pops up. I kind of felt like that through the whole movie. I mean, I appreciated it. I admired, and there's phenomenal acting, but it had like zero emotional resonance for me. So, yeah,
you know,
I mean, I didn't connect with any of the characters. It didn't mean anything to me.
In some ways, I felt the same way about this movie as I feel about the Ocean series. Mm. You know, they're all having a great time making it, and they're all doing really good work. But
yeah, I think
there's something soulless about
it. Yeah, I think when I look at the film as a whole, and I really enjoyed it whilst I was watching it. And I think, you know, props to it for great texture created by good music and costume and production design. The thing I came away with was it felt more like a Guy Ritchie movie, you know, very light and frothy about something that's quite serious and there's a lot of violence, rather than, you know, something spectacular that we saw from Silver Linings last year. And so I think the bar that David O. Russell has set for himself is really, really high. And I think if you compare this to Silver Linings, it hasn't got that emotional depth that I think Silver Linings had with it. So I think that's why we're kind of seeing a fallout. But that said, I mean, the performances are amazing. I mean, Christian Bale, Jennifer Lawrence, they're chameleons. I mean, to think, you know, you mentioned Dark Knight. To think that Christian Bale is the Dark Knight and Jennifer Lawrence is Katniss, I just couldn't believe their performances in this movie.
I mean, I agree with what you said earlier. I think part of the issue is, you know, the expectations. You know, David O. Russell now seems to be releasing a movie at the end of every year, which kind of automatically comes up for, you know, Oscars consideration. And I wish he had done a Beyonce and just released this movie quietly, you know, and then we wouldn't have had, you know, such a big, you know, hoo-ha about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I agree with you. I mean, my reaction to this movie was very similar to that for The Fighter, which I really appreciated, you know, as a piece of storytelling. But I didn't feel anything about that movie. And compare that with something like Silver Linings Playbook, which really grew on me and was like emotionally like a gut punch. Mm-hmm. This one, I kept waiting and it never came. So I think there are several things at play here. I mean, I think for me, I mean, I think, like you said, the performances are absolutely amazing. Yeah. But I think the most fatal issue for me, and it is related to the performances for the movie, the most fatal issue was that I could never really shake off the feeling right till the very last scene that they were all sort of like in a fancy dress competition.
Yes.
You know, like they were all showboating, like, you know, oh, look, there's Christian Bale, you know, bald and with a comb over and a paunch. And look, there's Amy Adams with plunging necklines. And, you know, it just felt like... And look, there's Christian...
Jeremy Renner.
No, the...
Bradley Cooper with a perm,
you know? And it just felt like they didn't grow into their clothing.
Yeah.
You know, Jennifer Lawrence is the only one
Correct.
Who actually felt comfortable in her clothing. Everybody else kind of felt like they were doing a school play.
I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think my favorite two performances were, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, because she's just so bloody good in this, but... The other one was Jeremy Renner, who he had, like, you know, a very heartfelt situation mm-hmm. that he was, you know, in many ways in the movie, he's kind of the emotional core that I had, you know, what mm-hmm. happened to him, what happened to his character in that movie was the big piece for me. But he's the only one that I really believed and that I had any emotional connection to. Everyone else, like you say, felt like they were larking around, which is where I go back to my Oceans. You put a great cast together of very talented people and let them have fun with these roles. But really, I think the movie was lacking any kind of... lacking heart, for want of a better word. It just didn't have... You know, I felt the same way a little bit about The Fighter. So Yazdie and I kind of aligned on the David O. Russell take. But Silver Linings was just a punch in the face. It was, like, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. I think, unfortunately, I think, like I said at the beginning, everything's a little bit too much of a caricature, and maybe a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's set in the 70s and 80s, but yet Ben Affleck managed to pull it off perfectly in Argo. So, yeah, I think there's maybe a little bit too much locking around, and then I think the Robert De Niro performance just didn't fit with everything else. It seemed so out of place. Yeah. I just thought maybe he turned up and forgot to put his costume on. It just didn't work for me. It was so strange. It was
typecast.
So grinding on me to watch that performance. It was so weird.
Yeah, people are like raving about his 10-minute performance in the movie. And I thought, this is what you call, you know, Robert De Niro to do. If you know, he's everybody who ever wants somebody to play this role always gets somebody else, because Robert De Niro has refused it. I mean, I bet everybody goes to him for that role for every movie.
You need a gangland boss.
Right, you go to Bob De Niro.
I mean, he was straight up Goodfellas. It was so strange, though. It didn't fit for me, but...
But I think maybe that is the issue with the movie, in that Christian Bale didn't need a belly and a comb over to play this part. The belly and the comb over... were nice little details about the character, but they made such a meal of it. The comb-over should be like one of these little ancillary details. Instead, we have like
a two-minute montage
on how he prepares his hair. And so that, I think, takes away from what the story was about, because it focuses on all these little details. All of these little things that ordinarily would add to the texture of the movie end up being these distractions.
Yeah, and I think, I did want to talk about Amy Adams. I fully agree. I think David Russell's intention with at least Christian Bale... Yeah, we shouldn't. But Christian Bale, I think he intended for that to be part of his character, but it came off so superficial. It came off like showboarding, like play acting. Like, look, there's him, you know, playing a bald man, kind of. So it didn't work, you know.
And the fact that it wasn't a prosthetic belly, he actually put on tons of weight to play that role. It's very strange.
No, I mean, I get that. Dedication to the role. He's a very, very hardcore method actor, I would imagine. But
great accents.
Yeah,
but too playful.
Yeah, and going back to Amy Adams, I think she was the least convincing of the lot.
Oh, I couldn't stand her.
You know, I think you and I have this, you know, hate. Get rid of Amy Adams.
Honestly,
campaign.
What's the big deal about her?
She's getting really annoying.
I liked her in this, and I think, you know.
Really?
I mean, she has. I think she has the best role in the movie.
Yeah,
you know, bar none.
Much of the movie is from her perspective.
Yeah, but you know, she has this. She's always had this sensibility of, you know, oh, you know, don't touch me, don't look at me, kind of thing. You know, and here she plays somebody who is kind of very liberated, and you know, she has these plunging necklines, and there are a lot of scenes, you know, where the camera really focuses on her considerable cleavage, and I had the sense, you know, that the minute the shot ended, you know, she was asking somebody, give me a towel, you know, I want to hide my boobs. I mean, there was something. It didn't feel You know, I think this would have been, this movie would have been so much better if they had switched the roles between Jennifer Lawrence and Amy Adams. You know, I mean, I don't mean to be insensitive. I'm not being ageist and I'm not making any commentary on physical appearances, but in what universe would a man have an affair with Amy Adams when he's married to Jennifer Lawrence? In what universe? I mean, you know, so I think if they'd switched those two actors, you know, I think it would have been better.
Well, she wasn't vampy enough. She was playing this very vampy character, this diva. And I love the costumes, but it just didn't work for me. It was just Amy Adams with long hair and a plunging neckline.
So blame the casting director, not Amy Adams. I think she's wonderful.
I don't know.
But she's not in The Man of Steel.
Stop it, you guys.
Okay, let's. Anything more to say on this one?
The only other thing I want to say, and I'm sorry I'm going to get on my soapbox, but so, I think one of the reasons why I did not like it as much as I thought I did was because I saw it at a terrible screening at the Reading Cinemas in downtown San Diego, and it was abysmal projection. I mean, the light was like flickering. It was like a bad bulb that they were using for projection. I don't know what it was, but it was awful. I mean, I wanted to get out and complain about it, and I did complain at the end of the movie, but probably they didn't do anything about it. So it really is a shame when, you know, you pay your $13 and you don't get your money's worth.
I'm a huge this is why I think so many movie theaters are kind of going downhill and losing business to, you know, companies like Arclight or Cinépolis, who really pride themselves on projection, because I'm with you, it's a horrible distraction.
Anyway.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Yazdi, you go first. You can kick off our first 2014 score.
Maybe it's that, you know, I'm getting tired of films asking the audience to sympathize with characters that are crooks. And we'll be talking about that in some more reviews coming up. Or maybe it was all the hype, like we said, that the movie surrounded with. But, you know, I just came away somewhat underwhelmed with this movie, unable to empathize with the characters or connect with them in any meaningful way. It's not a bad film by any chance, by any measure, but I just fail to understand, like you said, Joe, why people are calling this movie great. So it gets a tepid 5 out of 10 for me.
Wow, that's lower than I expected.
Yeah.
It's lower than the 6 that I'm going to give it. No, okay. I'm going to give it a 7. I enjoyed the movie in the moment. I'll agree to that. For the entire length of the movie, I had fun. It was playful, but I think, you know, I walk away with the sense that it was somewhat disposable entertainment, and the cast was terrific. They were all really, really good. Everyone committed to their roles, and, you know, the story played out in a way that I think was, you know, just clever enough to catch me off guard. I mean, you know, the plot surprised me in its little twists and turns, but, you know, ultimately, this is a good movie, an enjoyable movie, but not a great one. 7 out of 10.
So I'll go with 8. I think it was a good story. I think the costumes and the production was delightful. I think it has great star power and some really good standout performances. I really believe Jennifer Lawrence is going to get a Best Supporting nomination for this one. I would say hustle over and watch this one.
Wow. Yeah, I think award season is going to be kind to this movie, but I think more than anything, it's timing. If this had been released in April, I don't think we would be talking about it as a potential awards thing. It's just, you know, the strategy of releasing movies in December is so effective for them, because you come out with this real emotional reaction, and as you're completing your voting slip, that's the one that you recall. You know, meanwhile, Short Term 12 that you saw in the summertime, unless it had a huge impact on you, it's kind of in the distance. So it's part of the whole Oscar
Short
strategy.
Short Term what?
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Speaking of Oscar strategy.
Yes.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Gosh. Yes. I've been dying to speak about this one.
So Wolf of Wall Street is the latest movie by the infamous and famous Martin Scorsese, the great Martin Scorsese. The movie is essentially about a stockbroker by the name of Jordan Belfort, and he's the guy that basically came up with the whole pump and dump strategy. So they came up with this idea back in, I think, the late 80s, where you would sell these, you know, awful penny stocks to people. You would talk the price up and then sell your personal stake in it and walk away with millions. And they perfected this strategy and became multi-millionaires at the time through it. Was the strategy legal? No. The firm that he created, Stratton Oakmont, ended up being, you know, going underground, and they all ended up with some serious jail time. This movie is essentially a telling of that. Again, directed by Scorsese, it stars Leo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, Matthew McConaughey is in this, Kyle Chandler, Rob Reiner, Margot Robbie, and many others. It's a great Scorsese cast. So what do you think of Wolf of Wall Street?
I can talk about this one for hours, but I'll try. So obviously The Wolf of Wall Street is, you know, Scorsese's love letter to greed. And only this time I think he really throws restraint out the window and uses this, you know, over the top, everything but the kitchen sink approach, you know, for this 3-hour look at a character for whom more is never enough, you know, more is less, and he wants more and more and more. And it's kind of in its giddiness and extravagance, it almost feels like Scorsese by way of Baz Luhrmann almost. I mean, it's so outlandish and so, you know, over the top. But here's the thing, you know, about an hour into this film, as we watched this rather wretched character do wretched things, I decided that I do not have to like this film. And my feeling, unfortunately, did not change through the rest of the film. And maybe hate is too strong a word, but I certainly did not like this movie. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm firstly shocked by the amount of press, negative and positive, this is getting, and the number of articles that are being written about this movie. That said, I actually really enjoyed the first quarter of this movie, and then it took a really dark turn for me. Right off the bat, I was really confused by the use of the fourth wall and the narration, and then I think, like we're supposed to, I was totally disgusted by this movie. I really didn't enjoy it, and I really feel like we didn't need to see what we saw. But I think that's the reaction we're supposed to have. Oh, great Martin Scorsese, I don't know. And I don't know whether he's trying to ram down the disgusting story of the excess and the greed down our throats. In fact, I feel like this film is greedy and excessive in the way that it tells the story. I really didn't enjoy this movie by the end of it.
And Joe is going to call it the best movie
I'm
of the year.
I'm laughing here because this was one of my favorite movies of 2013. I thought this was brilliant. This was, my favorite Scorsese movie since Goodfellas. I mean, honestly, it had all of the intensity of that movie. And I think it was kind of Goodfellas done Wall Street does Goodfellas kind of thing. The whole gangster vibe was very much alive through the movie, even though these people weren't gangsters, they were, you know, stockbrokers, but that whole kind of excessive lifestyle, partying, what you tend to think of when you think of mafia, you got here from these guys. I thought it was playful, brilliantly funny. I don't normally like the breaking the fourth wall and the narration style, but that narrative style worked here because this was a character who, I mean, if you ever see the real guy, clips of the real guy on TV, Leo completely nailed the excessive personality of this guy. It's like an ode to his ego. The movie wasn't trying to give us any lessons about corporate welfare, greed, and all of the kind of things that are wrong with Wall Street. This was about this man who really thought that he was, you know, the shit, and the movie played it that way.
See, I get what you're saying. I get in many ways. I can understand why Scorsese made this movie because I get that, you know, what the Italian mafia was, you know, in the 50s and 60s with Goodfellas, and what the Irish gangs of New York were, you know, with the gangs of New York in the 19th century. Scorsese is saying in the late 80s, it was the Wall Street brokers.
Yeah, who were, it's exactly
I get that. I totally get that. But here's my problem with the movie is that the movie pretends to make a commentary, but it's at every single minute celebrating this. It's so giddy about it that I'm not buying any of. There's a lot written about this movie that, oh, this movie is condemning as much as it's celebrating. It's not condemning.
No,
it's not condemning at all.
I didn't think it was trying to.
I find it, who is this movie for? What's the point of the movie if what you're saying is for 3 hours you watch this guy be a douchebag and we should enjoy it? Why should we enjoy somebody being a wretched, miserable douchebag who is making money out of, you know, stealing old people out of their money? I mean, I find it deeply reprehensible.
I agree. Before Joe tries to defend Martin Scorsese, yes, you've taken the words out of my mouth. I think that's the reason the movie failed for me, is I didn't understand the point of it. There's no lesson. This isn't something that hasn't stopped happening for the last 20 years. And I think it just makes a mockery of the lives of the people who are affected by these heinous crimes and these disgusting people. There's no transformation. It doesn't look like any of the characters have paid for the lives they ruined. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. I think some people who are stupid are going to go into this movie and think that they want that life. And why all the nudity? There was way too much nudity, swearing, and drugs. It was just too much.
So, in the movie's defense, because I feel like I have to be its defense lawyer in this particular podcast. The movie is based on the book and is actually co-written by Jordan Belfort. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that perpetrated these crimes. He paid his, you know, he did his time in prison. One would argue he probably didn't pay for his crimes, because part of what he did at the end of it all was a bunch of plea dealing. So he basically set up all his accomplices and gave them jail time. Yep. By, so he's not a good person, but, you know, he wrote this story from his perspective, and this is a telling of the story from his perspective as he saw events. And, you know, frankly, I don't think he is that sorry for what happened. You know, he lived this life that was absolutely outrageous. Just like, it's almost like a rock star youth, right? You know, they all party hard, they do drugs, and they say, you know, and then they look back on it and they were like, yeah, wow, those were the days, dude, you know, when we did all this stuff. And this is what this movie was trying to do. I don't think it was trying to be any kind of commentary on the rights and wrongs of that lifestyle. I think it was just, this is what they did. This is what these guys did back in the 80s. This was how they lived their life.
Yeah, but that's how Hitler lived his life. Should we celebrate him? I mean, it's despicable what he did, and it's despicable. I'm not saying this guy's Hitler, but I'm saying you can make this argument for any person.
You can. Yeah. But I think it was a very deliberate artistic direction. I think if you choose to make the movie about that, then go ahead and do it in this manner.
Take a side. Either celebrate.
They did take a side.
No, I think
their side was that this guy was an awesome person, and look what he got away with. That's the side they're taking.
And you two could have this life if you led this dodgy lifestyle.
They took this guy's book and told the story that he told, and this guy thinks he's amazing. I mean, just watch him for 5 minutes. There's clips of him on YouTube.
No, I don't doubt it.
That's all that they tried to do, and I think he did it stylistically and hilariously. And his ego comes across in every frame. That's why we have the breaking the fourth wall thing. I don't think Scorsese's ever done that, where he has his camera, where his characters
issue I had is, you know, Scorsese regarded as one of the greatest living American directors. Really? He needs his lead character talking at you, like through the whole movie?
No, this is part of
it's 3 hours
movie.
Long. Use cinematic techniques in your head. You don't have to have the character talking at you.
He's communicating this guy's ego. This guy's ego pours through everything, right? Even into this movie. This is the story that he's telling.
Yeah. But this is the thing. You know why it's 3 hours long? Because there's minutes and minutes of useless footage.
Yeah.
Just minutes and minutes of ridiculous, excessive, stupid, unnecessary, ridiculous, disgusting footage that we could have done without. This film could have been an hour and 10 minutes and it might have been better.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Okay, so I think this is the other thing I wrote in my notes. I think Scorsese, more than any other director, I think he directs more in the editing room than he does, you know, on location. I mean, his movies are brilliant because of their editing. He's had this amazing collaboration with his editor, Thelma Schoonaker, and she's won Oscars for it because his movies are so wonderfully... I mean, he really built his movies in the editing room.
Right.
And so, therefore, this movie comes off as such a disappointment because it's so indulgent. I mean, really, you know, for the 11th time, do we need to watch him doing coke? I understand the whole point of the movie is excess. But you don't need to be excessive with excess to demonstrate excess. You know what I mean? And you know...
But Goodfellas did that.
Right, but it
Goodfellas was like 2 hour movie.
And it was smart, and it was twisty, and it was clever, and it was...
How many speeches does this character have to give to his company, you know, his little company of people? There's like three of them where he's talking to the people. And I really think Paramount put so much... I mean, you know, Scorsese famously, his original cut of the movie was 4 hours long. And Paramount was, I think he was under contract with Paramount Studios to release the movie before the end of the year. And they put, at one time, the movie was actually going to be delayed in 2014. And then, you know, a week later, they came back and said, no, Scorsese's going to, you know, edit the movie and get it out before the end of the year. And I think he felt pressured to release this movie. And so it came out as a rough draft. I bet, the DVD is going to be a shorter, more meanly cut movie. I mean, this movie just...
I think the other thing where it failed is I think this kind of character is a gift for any actor to play.
Oh, God,
but
yeah.
Somehow no depth came across, unless of course there was no depth, in which case, we're just watching a man and those around him experience excess again, and then I really don't get the point of the movie. So what's, again, I come back to, I don't understand the point of the movie. I just don't get it, because we saw things like Wall Street from the 80s, anyway. We'd seen this kind of character done before. And so unless you're bringing something new to the table, and, in this economic environment, to bring up a story like this in this economic environment, there has to be some lesson. Of course there has to be some lesson. You can't just put a movie like this out there and expect that people are going to not want to take something away from it.
I can only bring you back to the point that this story was written by the man from his own perspective.
Yeah, but so was Mein Kampf. This is my point.
Right. And if we made a movie of Mein Kampf, then this is how it would be told, right? So to make an accurate movie of Hitler's memoirs...
Why should... Go on.
No, to make an accurate movie of Hitler's memoirs, we would see things in a way that one would not ordinarily expect to see these events being told.
Right, but then we would feel some sympathy. Wouldn't we feel some understanding of his journey?
Or his pathology, yeah.
Or, yes, maybe not even an apology because he was stupid, no. But, I mean...
This could get really, really...
Off track.
I'm not going to say these things on the internet.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, that's exactly what this movie is. It is filmed for an audience that is not necessarily trying... They're not trying to give us the lessons of what went wrong in the 80s. They're saying that this is a story of a man who thinks he's amazing, and this is how he told it. And Scorsese chose to make that movie.
And what's the rating? What's the? Is this a R? Hard R?
It's an R plus. I mean.
Oh,
is,
I mean, this.
It
is,
had to be. It was. It originally got an NC-17, and he had to shave stuff off the movie to get an.
No pun intended.
To get an R rating. So I think this is. I mean, this movie is getting so much press right now, precisely because of this issue. Is, you know, the people who are just giddy and amazed and in love with this movie are the same people who have watched the same movie as those who are appalled by it. They've both seen the same movie, and it's amazing that the polarity of opinion, you know, from watching, some people find it just a great time of the movies and others find it horrific. So I've been reading a lot about it, and A.O. Scott in the New York Times, I think, has come the closest to really crystallizing this. And, you know, he in his review of the movie, he says, you know, is this a celebration or is this a condemnation? And by virtue of the movie being released now, where all this stuff has happened, the 1%, the Wall Street collapse, all that.
Bernie Madoff.
How can you not assign some degree of judgment to it? You know, and by virtue of the fact that Scorsese has very deliberately sidestepped any judgment, unfortunately, it comes off like he's celebrating this person. And, you know, I don't see any condemnation in the movie at all. Now, you know, DiCaprio has gone on record in his interviews to say, look, this guy represents the worst of, you know, what there is in the world right now. Well, if he is, I can't get that from watching the movie.
It's called The Wolf of Wall Street, not The Hero of Wall Street.
Right, but you know, Wolf, I mean, I would call him Wolf The Vermin of Wall Street is really what the film should have been called. But anyway, I guess we're so opposed on this table.
And Leonardo DiCaprio is so good here. I mean, I don't think he's given as much in any movie. And he's an actor who always gives a lot to his movies. But, I mean, he is there in every frame of the movie. I could be mistaken. Yeah, he probably is. And he gives himself emotionally, mentally, physically, in every way to it. But, you know, like you said earlier, all this, you know, requirements from all these actors and all this nudity and all this in-your-face, over-the-topness, it just ultimately boils down to nothing for me.
I agree.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. I mean, it's how you feel about the movie. I mean, just to speak to Leo, I often knock him for being a little too intense, a little over the top. I find him to be one of those actors that's that just needs to dial it down a little bit here. Well, here it works perfectly for him. It works really well in his favor. It works in the character. It works when he talks to the audience. Just ego, 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 ego. You know, this isn't a nice guy. I never felt for one moment like I want to hang out with this guy or live in his world, because none of it seemed appealing to me. But here DiCaprio's performance really caught the essence of the guy. And if you, again, go on Google, do a quick search, look for Jordan Belfont, the man. Watch him talk for 5 minutes and you will totally understand what this movie is about.
Let's wind this one up with pleasure, Joe.
No, let's end on a good note. One of you guys, both of you guys score first.
Right, I'll go first then. Too much nudity and sex. There's no need for it. Disgustingly comedic and disgusting excessive overall. I felt so dirty when I came out of the theatre. Martin Scorsese's worst movie yet. 3 out of 10.
It's going to be like that. Look, I mean... this film is exceptionally well made. Of course it is. You know, Scorsese made it. And it boasts some truly off-kilter, over-the-top scenes, some of which, I believe, are the stuff of instant legend. I mean, you know, to give credit where it's due, there's this episode which comes late in the movie where DiCaprio and Jonah Hill's character take these Quaaludes. And, it's a sustained, anarchic scene of comedy, which is one for the books. I mean, it's brilliant. I think, you know, 10 years from now, people will be watching that 20-minute piece. But I really had a problem with what the movie is trying to say and then doing something else. I think the movie has this... It has these, ambitions of presenting this person as a case study. But the way the movie has been made with so much joy and giddiness, it lands up almost endorsing that person's behavior. And that's where I have the problem. And so, you know, I actually was relieved when the movie ended. I really was. I'd had enough at like the 2.5 hour point. And I was literally grateful when the movie ended. I give it a little bit more generous 5 out of 10. But even that's... You know,
you're being excessive like the film.
I'm being excessive, and I really want to tell Scorsese, you know, come on, you know, come on.
So, I mean, I say just drop any sense of morality here. I mean, this movie is like a party. I mean, it's like hanging out, I think, at one of these Wall Street parties for 2.5 hours. You look upon this life of excess that they all lived, and the movie is really... You can't forget that it's written by the guy who lived this life as a celebration of the things that he did. I mean, he never wrote this book as an apology. He wrote this book as a telling of, look how cool we were. You know, we were the rock stars. We were the... And that's the movie that Scorsese's made here, and I think it works brilliantly for that reason. I did write in my notes here that I thought it was a little too playful for some of the cynical critics, and I'm not sure that it's going to do well at awards time. But I had a blast in this movie. It's one of my favourite movies of 2013, a 9 out of 10. Yeah, I loved it. I thought this was brilliant.
A 3, 5, and a 9. That's awesome. That's about as polarised as we've
really
ever been.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was, you know... I agree with you in terms of the morality.
I just wanted some lesson. I just didn't want to walk away saying crime does pay. And I think that's what you walk away with. Just thinking the bad guys didn't really get got.
There's a scene.
Crime does pay.
There's a scene in the movie where there is driving under the influence, right? And the way that that scene plays out is very clever, very cleverly done. But there's no lesson there. There's no wagging of fingers at the end of it that one shouldn't do that, that the character could have suffered incredible consequences from those actions. It was just the fact that this is what this douchebag did. And I think the whole movie is...
But it's played to be, you know, high comedy at every point.
It is. Right.
Including when you find out what the consequences were of that scene.
So think of it as like one big frat party. You know, it's Animal House and Wall Street. Oh.
See, but unlike you, Rashmi, I don't even expect the movie to be some... It doesn't have to take a moral position. I'm fine if the central character of a movie is deeply amoral. And, you know, if the movie is about, you know, look, such people existed. And this is based... I have no problem with that. The problem I have is with the tone of the movie, which is not even going there. The tone of the movie at every point during 3 long hours is, isn't this guy a rock star? Isn't he fun? And that I have a problem with, you know. Somebody needs to call Scorsese out. You cannot make, you know, you can't make a movie.
He wrote it. He wrote it. The guy who lived his life wrote the movie.
We're spending way too much airtime. We need to stop the excess. Stop the excess. I insist.
All right.
No more words on this movie.
This debate will continue off air.
Yeah.
All right, mail@moviewhotlovers.com. Let us know what you think. If I'm right or the other two are wrong, who cares? Go see this
movie. We are in the minority, I think. I'm in the minority.
I think we are.
It's carrying a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I think I'm on the majority side, but obviously not everyone loved it. Twitter.com/MovieWallers, Facebook.com/MovieWallers as well. We've got reviews of Walter Mitty, Mr. Banks, Osage County, and Out of the Furnace coming up in future podcasts. So keep tuned as we carry on with our 2013 wrap-up. Until our next podcast, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.